This piece has been brought to you by Bonnie Plants, bonnieplants.com.
I'm Laura Stanley, host of Inside School Food. You are listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Sharp and Hot. I am your host, Emily Peterson, broadcasting to you live from Roberta's Pizza in Bushwick, Brooklyn. This is episode number 127. We have some excellent ambient restaurant sound. It is hoppin'. There is a flow to these Tuesday afternoons that, as a veteran of the hospitality industry, I cannot figure out. Sometimes it is packed to the walls like today. Other times it's nice and quiet and you can walk right in. So it is, let's see, I have big news. I am done teaching for the summer. It is a huge relief. My grades have been, well, 90% of my grades have been close enough to celebrate. My grades being turned in. The weather is finally getting slightly warm. I think my tiny little tomato seedlings that I hardened off a little too early because I was super enthusiastic when it was warm earlier. I think they're going to pull through. And Bonnie Plants is the sponsor of the show. So if not, I'm just going to call them up and be like, hey, can you please send me some replacements because I killed all of my heirloom tomatoes this year. But I think they're going to make it. So on that exciting note, I want to welcome my guest into the studio. I'm super, super excited. We have not met before, and yet I feel a real kindred spirit to host of Korean Food Made Simple and author of a book by the same name, Chef Judy Ju. Welcome to Sharp and Hot.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much for coming. I was flipping through your book for like the 50th time since I received it in the mail. I'm like, and I want to make that. And I want to make that. So let's talk about your origin story, because you are the child of two Korean immigrants who came to the United States, and you were born not 20 miles from where I now live.
Yep, Summit, New Jersey.
Yep, where so I go every Sunday for the farmer's market.
Yep, hailing from the great state of New Jersey. And I had a bit of a really random route into the cooking world. It wasn't that straightforward at all. I had a very tiger mother upbringing and, you know, lots of piano lessons, and I had to go to certain schools or whatever, or else I'll cast shame on my family and generations to come.
So that's a real thing. As an outsider, that's a real thing.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, and I was basically like the dumb one because my sister went to Yale and I went to Columbia. So I wasn't good enough to get into Yale. And I ended up going to Columbia and then went into finance, and I was in finance for about 5 years. And
now, at that point when you decided to pursue finance, because you have this awesome career changer story, which is something mm-hmm. that I get a lot of feedback from the listeners, they love to hear this. Was finance something you were drawn to, or was it external pressure that was like, well, I guess I should do this?
You know, it was kind of both, because also when you're that young and you're in college, like Wall Street at that time in that year, this is back in 1990,
right.
you know, finance was like money grew on trees, and it was kind of Wolf of Wall Street days. Like,
oh,
I kid you not.
Yeah, no, like, I remember it well.
Lots of shady stuff going on, but it was so much fun. And you're running around New York City, you got a bit of cash in your pocket. You know, like, you're going to the best restaurants ever, you're drinking the best wine, and it's kind of fun, you know. And back then, they were the hardest jobs to get. I mean, I was one of 11 students handpicked from across the country in my analyst class.
Wow.
And so,
how many of them were women?
There were three of us, I think. Yeah. But then I was placed on a desk later on where I was the only female professional on that trading desk. Yeah.
Wow.
So I it's really funny. I went to an all-girls school in Summit from kindergarten to 12th grade at Kent Place. And then I went to engineering school, which is all men.
Right.
And then I went to finance and trading, which is like all men. And then I go to kitchens, which is like all men.
Right.
So I don't seem to be able to find a balance in my life. And so I was kind of drawn to finance at the time just because it seemed like it was the trendy thing to do and all my friends were doing it. And
there's a lot of money and it's flashy. Sure.
And and everybody was just, it's Columbia's one of these feeder schools into Wall Street. And but after 5 years, I was like, you know what? This is kind of like not really enjoyable. I mean, I didn't really have a passion for it. And, you know, fixed income derivatives, like, Wow, exciting. I mean, some people do find it exciting, you know, but I'm just not one of those people.
I don't even know what that is.
Yeah, it's basically Bonds. Like, I was schlepping Bonds.
And, okay, I just watched The Big Short.
Oh, okay.
And I, yeah. For some reason, I thought it was going to be like The Wolf of Wall Street, which was like dark and creepy, but also there was so much that I recognized from my own. I grew up in the Hamptons that era, and so I like recognized a lot of places and personality types. And then I watched The Big Short, and I was like, "That wasn't funny at all. Yeah. That was not funny at all."
You're like, "This is actually kind of crazy that this could happen.
That this could happen, and that it just keeps happening."
Yeah.
So did you depart before or after the crash?
Oh,
the
way, way before. I mean, okay. I left finance in like 2002.
Okay.
Like way before.
So you had some...
Yeah.
Was it foresight or was it just that you were like, I'm done with this?
Oh, I'm done.
Yeah. Okay.
Done. Yeah. Done, dusted. Like, can't handle this anymore. And then I went to culinary school here in New York, in SoHo, at the French Culinary Institute, now called the International Culinary Center.
A proud sponsor of Heritage Radio
exactly.
Network.
Exactly. And never looked back. I kind of... yeah, and actually, Patrick Martins, your founder, when they were in that same building as the FCI, I was an intern while I was a student there. So that was like one of my first jobs in the food world. I was working at Slow Food USA. And from there, I started the first inner city slow food in schools project, Harvest Time in Harlem, and then worked at Sever Magazine with Coleman Andrews, who I saw earlier today. I was an intern there also. So I'm actually, it's kind of coming full circle. I'm back to both places where I first have like my first job experiences at a cooking school. Yeah.
So you finished culinary school. What did your mom say when you told her you wanted to go to cooking school?
Oh, she freaked out. Totally. Absolutely. You know, like, why did we spend so much money for you to go to, like, this Ivy League school, for you to just, quote unquote, become a chef, all this stuff. And it was kind of, yeah, tough on her ego, I guess.
I'm looking around for my phone because I see yours there and I realize I don't think I put mine on silent. So hopefully no one's going to call me. But if they do, I'll know.
That's
that
okay. We'll put them on the air. We'll have
just
a big party.
There we
yeah.
go. Perfect.
It's fine. It's fine.
So she thought that you were nuts and that you brought shame on your family. I'm
kind of.
Yeah.
Basically.
Does she talk to you now?
Yes. Okay. Yes. I mean, now they kind of get it. But you have to understand, this is like a different generation. And so, like, my parents were immigrants and then they came here. They were like, you know, typical immigrant story, and like worked so hard with like no money in their pockets, couldn't speak the language, and basically sacrificed everything they had personally, professionally, everything to put us in the best schools that they could. And they kind of saw it as me throwing it all away. You know, like I didn't necessarily have to do all of that to go into restaurants.
You know, I have this conversation with a lot of people on this show and off the air about how that's you don't get to be successful in the food world without a huge foundation. We did a whole show called Passion Is Not Enough about how loving food
is not enough.
It's just
not. I totally agree. And you know what? As a business owner, and I'm running so many things now, and it's not just the restaurant and it's not just the food. It is everything. It is operations. You know, I was an industrial engineering operations major, luckily, you know, so right. I know about process flows and efficiency, but also my finance skills. It is a business at the end of the day. And you have to be able to read a profit and loss statement. You have to understand what GPs are. You have to be able to do cost controls. And then on top of that,
and we just lost like 2/3 of the people who thought that they wanted to be chefs.
Exactly.
You know? No, I don't want to do that.
Well, this is, I think there's a statistic that like something like 85% of all restaurants go out of business in the first 3 years.
Right. That's
and,
true.
And I think a lot of that obviously is funding, but another part of that is also that people don't have the skills in order to run businesses.
Right.
And it really takes a lot of skill as well as hard work.
Right. I mean, I think cooking gets you so far. Cooking school will teach you passion. Cooking will feed your soul and feed your friends. But to open a restaurant because you feel like you're good at throwing parties is like, get an MBA. Because at the end of the day, that's going to make you, what you want is to run successful restaurants.
It's true. I don't know if you need an MBA, but I do think you need a very good high school degree at least, like and a good one. Like pay attention in school.
Right.
because
let's say that
it's
loud
true
and like, clear.
Pay attention in school because you need really strong written and oral communication skills, and as you've seen, publications have no money anymore, you know, and even production studios have no money anymore. So time is money, and if you can deliver a recipe when they ask you to, if you can write something whenever this editor asks you to do something last minute and it requires very little editing, they will use you again and again and again. And if you can speak in sound bites and read from an auto cue without stuttering ring. They will use you on that show again, you know, and that's a skill actually. So Right. Yeah, make sure you learn how to read and write well.
I can't drive this home enough. I was, you know, I'm grading my students' papers, and by and large, they're very talented and they're very articulate. And then some of them less so. And yeah. It's like, I'm not a writing teacher, you know? And so I feel a certain sense of obligation because many of them want to go on to work in the food industry. Many of them want to be on television. Many of them want to write cookbooks. I fell into this trap myself thinking if you publish a cookbook, that's your golden ticket. You're set. And then I've learned.
No. No. And so that's a myth. So that is a big myth.
If we are talking directly to anyone who's like, oh my God, why do I have to learn how to write this sentence? Because you do.
It's
because
so it's important. So important. And in any industry, you have to know how to communicate effectively no matter what you do.
So you finish culinary school, and then what's your next step? I want to make sure I get the biographical timeline correct.
Yeah, so I was working at Sever and also at Slow Food USA, and I was both in the test kitchen as well as on the editorial side at Sever Magazine and loved it. Actually employed Vivian Zhao, who was the director of the test kitchens, and she worked with me on this book, so I can fully attest that every single recipe has been tested and developed to her crazy standard, which is amazing. Yeah.
Which is excellent because as a home cook,
yeah,
you want to know that the ingredients that you're buying and it's all going to end up being something delicious.
It serves exactly four people, right. You know? Mm-hmm. So after that, what did I do? Gosh. I moved out to London with my then husband, now ex-husband, and started working in kitchens. Worked my way through a number of different kitchens and started doing TV work. And that came about through a really chance meeting at a party. I met a woman who was a producer at a very large company, and she had a show on TV where she had a lot of guest chefs and appearances, and she wanted to have me on there. And so I just started going on, becoming regular, and then the whole Iron Chef opportunity came up. And because the Iron Chef franchise, especially back then, was so strong, I mean, it was going on everywhere, Vietnam, Thailand, Australia, America, you know, 20-something seasons in America, and Iron Chef UK. Everyone's like, oh my gosh, everybody wanted to be one of the Iron Chefs. And so everyone in the country went for it. And after casting call, I ended up landing one of the four seats, which was pretty amazing, and represented America in Iron Chef UK, and cooked my heart out. That's probably the hardest show I've ever done in my life. And the producers who produced Iron Chef America came over to help consult in the UK, and they saw me and then brought me over to start doing work in the U.S. So that's when I started judging Next Iron Chef and Iron Chef America, even competing and becoming a regular face on Food Network, kind of on the circuit. And then eventually that led to my own show, a cooking channel, Korean Food Made Simple. And
because for people who don't know, Cooking Channel and Food Network are the same.
Yeah, they're sisters. I mean, Food Network is more entertainment. Cooking Channel is more cooking, I guess is the way that they describe it. And lo and behold, I have a book, and now I have two restaurants called Jinju, one in London and one in Hong Kong. And I am busier beyond belief, but it's good.
When you hear yourself say all that, does it land with you? You're like, that's
no,
me.
No, it doesn't at all. Because actually, and if you would have asked me 10 years ago if I thought I would ever have done this, I would never have thought of it in a million years. Like, literally, when I went to cooking school, I thought I would have cool birthday parties for my kids. Like, I did not think it would ever turn into, like, Iron Chef. Are you kidding me? You know, like, filming with some of my idols, like Alton Brown. And, I mean, this is, like, stuff of dreams and, you know, pinching myself. And I was just in this neighborhood a couple weeks ago filming Beat Bobby Flay. And, you know, and it's just, this is, I consider myself extremely blessed and extremely lucky. But you do make your own luck. And another word of advice I would say is that be careful how you treat people, you know, and because you never know. I remember watching an interview by Pink the other day, and she said, you see the same people on the way up as you see on the on the way down, you know, and it's true. And I have a very clear, vivid memory of people who were good to me and people who weren't. And it's funny how karma kind of comes around. And obviously everybody, you know, you should always just be a good person. Like, you shouldn't have to think about it and try to do it out of self-gain, you know, but it's just it's kind of funny because I've had a relatively short, like, rapid rise in an industry, whereas you know, I only started really doing this, like, really doing it for the past 6 years or something, and it's kind of interesting seeing what's going on and positive energy and negative energy, I guess.
Conan O'Brien, in his very last episode when he was hosting The Tonight Show, right? The Tonight Show, that was the one that didn't go so well. In that very last episode, he gave this really emotional speech, and it was a piece of advice to people, which was just be nice.
Yes.
And I was like, and it was so powerful.
True.
Like,
it's
yeah,
really
just be
true.
Nice. And like you said, be nice so you don't have to think about it.
Yeah.
Like, just be a nice, like, human being.
Like, every day, I just, you know, like, just be happy, be nice, and try to be a better person and learn something. And I think it's just so important, and you can kind of take it for granted. But especially when you're successful, there are so few people that are really genuinely happy for your success. You know, it's probably like your mom, and that's
right,
it. You know,
right. Yeah, that's just,
and
that's very
you're never
true.
Gonna have 100% approval rating. Particularly when you're in the public eye, and part of being in the public eye is that you are subject to criticism, and you are subject to mean tweets and all of this stuff.
Do you know? Get mean tweets?
Of course,
wow.
Of course. You know, I've been attacked and in the press and all this stuff, and it's a lot of it's just, you know, just pettiness and jealousy, and I mean, who knows what people are motivated by, but
right.
People never hate a loser. You know, people never bother to go after somebody that they're not jealous of, you know, in some way or whatever. So when you're successful, you are always going to have haters, but just surround yourself by the people that believe in you and that love you and that you love, and then you will be fine.
Do you read it or do you ignore it?
I ignore it.
Yeah.
I do very little on social media, actually.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm on it sometimes, but I kind of had to, you know, like, have a lot of people help me with it just because I'm so busy. I need like 48 hours in the day.
Yeah. But I did I had a very small stint on television. I was on Cutthroat Kitchen.
Oh, fun.
And it was really, really fun. And I just loved it. But there was, like, out of like the dark corners of the internet,
yeah,
people like attack what you look like,
oh,
and what,
yeah,
you weigh.
Crazy.
It was like, holy,
oh,
crap.
Yeah, what you have your hair like,
yeah,
you know, and especially as women, we're subjected to this 1,000 times more than men.
Right.
Like, I get criticized for what I'm wearing, what my hair looks like all the time, whereas they would never do that to, yeah, male chefs.
You want
to
know what I felt though?
Yeah.
Like, I'd made it.
There you go. If I have Twitter haters, I've made it.
I've made it. Like, this person
That's
is
true.
Angry enough about a decision that I made. It was like, in a game show.
Yeah, I know.
I've made it.
Yeah.
Okay, Judy, we have to take a quick break, and then can we walk through the cookbook together?
Because
you shared
great.
Some recipes, and I'm so excited to talk about
be
them.
Fantastic.
Just your garden. It's the way you live. And there's so much to know. But you have help. Bonnie Plants. Now with Bonnie's app, Homegrown, you can learn about veggie and herb varieties, track and record your garden with photos and notes, share on Facebook and Twitter, and so much more. How'd you ever grow without it? Get Homegrown with Bonnie Plants for iPhone and Android. The more you know, the better you can grow. With Bonnie.
On Tuesday, May 17th, please join Snacking Tunes for the 9th Annual Barbecue Blowout. Our inaugural chefs are Kings County Imperial with Beats and Rhythms by Domino Records. Tickets are $10 in advance at BBQ Blowout, May2016.eventbrite.com. Tickets include a plate of food and a complimentary Brooklyn Brewery. We're happy to announce returning partners of Nikki Digital and Heritage Radio Network. We hope to see you there.
Welcome back to Sharp and Hot. Joining me in the studio is Judy Ju, author of the beautiful new cookbook, Korean Food Made Simple. Welcome back.
Thank you.
Okay, so I'm flipping through this book, and the first thing that you have, which everyone who opens it who is unfamiliar with Korean ingredients is super thankful for, is an introduction to the Korean pantry.
Yes.
If anyone knows me well, they know that if I had to choose a cuisine to eat for the rest of my life, it would be Korean food.
No way.
Mexico is like a very close second, but Korean food always wins. For Mother's Day, my husband made me a short rib rice bowl.
Oh my gosh, I love that you're a Korean sister.
I am totally
a Korean sister. Oh my gosh.
Can I be honorary Korean even
yes,
though I'm a
we have
like,
to like ferment something together now. So, let's like, yes. Shall we ferment together?
Okay, so.
We should make kimchi.
Your first recipe in the whole book is kimchi. And that's yes. So brave for like that you got to do that, that a cookbook publisher was like, go for it. I'm yeah. so excited that this book
well,
exists.
Kimchi is ubiquitous, but it's synonymous with Korean food.
Mm-hmm.
It really is. And it really represents Koreans. It's I would say it represents Koreans culturally also. It's spicy. It's fiery. It's dramatic. It's in your face, just like the people.
Which and, is why I think I love you so much.
and it's also really good for you. It's a superfood of the world. It's chocked full of lactobacillus. It's really, really good for your gut.
And
it
all
really
of that, gives you, I mean, it just kind of like spontaneously happens, right? So walk us through the process of making
spontaneously
kimchi.
Happens.
Well, it's like, I'm reading the recipe. I'm like, anyone can, everyone
it's really
can
easy.
And should do this.
Yeah, you just brine it overnight in some, you know, salt and water. And then, and you soak that. So actually, let me step back. Kimchi is a general term for any fermented vegetable or fruit. And you can kimchi, if I make it a verb, kind of anything. So anything from eggplant to cauliflower to apples to pears. And there are officially over 189 varieties of kimchi in Korea.
Oh, wow.
To give you an idea. But that doesn't even include all the different varieties that every family makes. So every family, every grandmother, every mother makes her own version of kimchi. It's like the spaghetti sauce of Korea.
Okay.
And so, and there are regional differences also. So depending on where your family is from, they might have more seafood in it. It might be funkier. It might be stronger. It might have squid in it. It might have oysters in it. It might even have plum wine in it. So there are many different varieties of kimchi. But basically, in its essence, when people say kimchi, most commonly they refer to a fermented spicy cabbage, which is what you're looking at right
so now. The cabbage, and the following page is what I love, maybe even slightly more, which is the cubed radish, which I stand in front of the refrigerator and just eat straight out of the jar. I love it.
It's that umami. Fermentation really gives this savoriness, this addictive Moorish quality to the food that makes you just want to keep eating it.
So let me ask you a question. When I open my jar of kimchi and it goes like, psst,
yes.
That's a good thing,
That's
right?
a good thing.
Okay.
Yes.
Can kimchi go bad if I've left it? Because sometimes it gets buried behind the bean paste and all the other stuff. And then I'll find it. My husband's much more wary of food having turned than I am.
It doesn't really go bad.
Yeah,
I mean,
like,
people eat it 3 years old.
Right,
yeah.
It gets better.
Yeah. And when you think it's getting a bit too funky, that's when you cook with it. That's when you make your kimchi jjigae or your kimchi gook, and you make soups and stews and you make stir fries or kimchi pancakes or something like that.
So kimchi pancakes were something that I discovered eating out in Korean restaurants, which have been like, oh my God, changed my life.
Is this so fun?
I'm
sharing, cooking on the table.
It's
all the variety.
So we chop up to make the kimchi pancakes. It's on page 47. Also, who is your food photographer? Because everything's
beautiful,
beautiful.
Right? Jean Cazal, an illustrious French photographer who has been living in London for a very long time. And he's so talented. And we did the whole shoot in my apartment. And
wow.
Yeah, you wouldn't be able to tell.
No, it
but
looks like it's
yeah,
in London?
In London. And Vivian and I cooked every single recipe. I think I am probably one of the few chefs or cookbook authors that can actually say that they've cooked every single dish in the book. And I actually did with Vivian. Yeah,
it's got to make the book feel so much more personal and yours.
Oh, completely.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Because now, like, you know, you own it. Okay. So the two recipes that you've shared with the listeners, which are going to be on heritageradionetwork.org. If you click on the Sharp and Hot link, the first one is the meaty dumplings.
Yes, I love that.
Tell me the story about you and your sister making them.
This is like slave labor. My mom used to, of course, make these like once a month in batches of hundreds or thousands. And literally every single surface that was flat was had a plate on it or a tray that had dumplings on it. And then she would just systematically freeze them and then put them in baggies. And then we would just pull them out and put them in soups and stews or whatever throughout the month. But I wasn't that good at making them because I was really little. And I remember, like, you put too much meat and the meat busts out or whatever. And I make different shapes and stuff. And also, it's not fun after 5 minutes, you know? And so you're just like, oh my God, this is a chore.
I've taught cooking classes where, you know, we're making ravioli. I used to teach a stuffed pasta class, and people would sign up and pay $175 to be there. And after like 6 angliotti or whatever, they would be like, oh my God, how many of these do I have to make?
It's
work. It's I was like, as many as you want to eat, my friend.
Even Vivian said this is one of the best dumpling recipes she's ever tried. And she's Chinese, so she knows her dumplings.
Right.
Yeah. It's
so
really
you make
good.
This delicious filling out of a combination of pork, beef, and tofu. Mm-hmm. And you crumble up the tofu and everything else, all of the
cabbage, ginger, garlic, sesame oil, soy sauce, salt, pepper. I mean, a whole smattering of Asian aromatics, really classic Korean ingredients go in.
And then you fill the wonton wrappers, which you are store-bought, totally
cool. Store-bought, totally cool. That's fine.
Mm-hmm. I feel like if you're going this far, you don't have to also make the dumpling
exactly.
dough on top of it.
I know.
Tell me about dried chili threads, because looking at the photograph, it looks like saffron. I know that it's not. So tell me about this garnish.
It's a garnish that actually also provides a lot of flavor, because it is made from chili skins, and they're cut thin, thin thread, needle skinny. And so they look like saffron, but they can be really long and wiry, and they make for a beautiful color, as well as for a little bit of spice. And they also give a little bit of height. They're architecturally kind of interesting to put on your plate, too.
And the dumplings are fried?
Fried or steamed, or you can throw into soups, boil them. You can do whatever you want.
Amazing. Oh my, and like, I'm just so excited to eat all of
this. You should totally make that.
I'm
going to
absolutely make this. And my kid's a little young to help with dumpling making, but not quite. Like, he knows how to, like, stir onions, and I can let him, get in there with his hands.
Yeah.
So then you also shared your grandmother's chicken recipe.
Not fried chicken. Your mom's barbecue chicken.
Mom's barbecue. Okay, yes.
Barbecue chicken.
I have the wrong page open
here.
No
worries. There it is.
There it is. Okay, mom's barbecue chicken. So tell me about your mom's barbecue chicken.
Mom's barbecue chicken.
Is she listening?
I don't know if she's listening. I don't know. She's probably at work. She's still working. She's like 73 and she's like still hustling, man. Working. She's in real estate and God bless her.
Does she still live out in New Jersey?
She still lives out in New Jersey. Yeah. She's in Somerset now. They moved to like an active living community. So they're very cute. My mom and dad. Yeah.
Adorable.
And so this barbecue chicken, she used to cook on a little grill in our garage and she's always embarrassed when I say that, but I'm like, but it's true. She's like, no, it seems dirty. I'm like, it wasn't like in the car or anything. This is like this little area of her garage. And she had this tiny little like stone grill. And because it was very smoky, she just wanted, and also it was cold also, you know, at times. And she used to just cook the chicken and the smoke alone and the aromas just from making it just like makes everybody run to the table. And I just made this for a show the other day. And literally everyone walking through the set, like, what's cooking? That smells amazing. I want to eat that. Like, this is so delicious. Yeah.
I really want you to write your memoir because I want to know more about your life. You have this incredible talent, incredible story. You're so warm. You deserve all of the success and accolades that you've gotten. Thank you so much for coming on Sharp and Hot. I'm really honored to have you here. I'm going to have to ask your people to send me another copy of the book because I will send cookbooks out that folks send to me, I'll send out to the listeners.
Amazing.
If they use the hashtag Sharp and Hot on a Instagram picture of their food that they're cooking anyway, although people hashtag Sharp and Hot with all sorts of interesting stuff, just
amazing.
So that like there's a community of people.
Yeah.
This is another one of those books I'm not giving away. So I'm going to have to get my own copy.
Of course.
The other hugely successful, wonderful woman in my life that I want to bring a little bit of attention to is my dear friend, April Wachtel, who has been a guest on the show, is a friend of Astor Center and Heritage Radio Network. Her Kickstarter for Swig and Swallow launched today. Now, Judy, I don't know if you know about Swig and Swallow, but I'm going to do my best.
It sounds interesting, though.
I'm going to do my best April PR pitch for you and for the listeners. She has developed a company with her partner where they are going to be the blue apron of homemade mixology and cocktails.
Oh.
So you will have delivered to your house all pre-mixed, pre-batched juice, fruit juice, whatever it is that you need. And then at home, you just dump in the bottle of booze that you
Oh, you can't want. Deliver alcohol.
You can't. Well, you can, but it's like, you know, sticky with the laws.
Okay,
and,
yeah.
You know, it's just easier. And then this way, they focus on super fresh juices, everything. And the cocktails that this woman makes are
amazing.
Amazing. Sure. Absolutely amazing. So if you go to Kickstarter and Google Swig and Swallow, throw them a few clams because they are really, really awesome. They have built this company from the ground up. She's just an amazing person, and I want all of the success in the world for her.
I love the name.
Isn't it cute?
It's very cute.
Super cute logo, yeah. Like everything about this. And she was just on National Morning Television.
Amazing.
I don't know if it was Good Day or Good Morning America, something like making cocktails with like Al Roker out in the street.
Amazing.
All of the facts on that I think are wrong. She's going to be, she'll laugh when she hears that. But something, it was something along,
like that.
Something
amazing.
Along those. So I'm super, super proud of her
and
as
women
well.
Women entrepreneurs, you got to support them.
Seriously.
Women, we have to support each other.
We're almost out of time, but I do this, it's not an appearance. My friend is a high school teacher and he teaches AP level high school seniors English, and they read a book called The Awakening, which is a novel that I've never read, but it's basically about a woman who wants to go out and explore the world, and she can't because of all the societal pressures that have been put upon her, and spoiler alert, she kills herself at the end. So the students, these high school students, have read this like uplifting book about women, and then he has myself and a couple of other people come in on a panel and speak as women in non-traditional fields. So I come in and talk as a chef, there's an engineer, which you mentioned, a woman who worked on Wall Street for a very long time. And
I'm all three.
You're all three. I'm all I know. Three. I should have you come to Eddie's, and it's out in New Jersey. But you know what? Before this time, I thought to myself, I don't know. I think kids get it. Like when they see women, they see what we're doing. And then my 3-year-old wanted to have an argument with me about whether or not women can operate heavy machinery like excavators. And I said, of course they can. And he said, Mommy, please. So I went on YouTube and I was like, that's it. And I Google or I YouTube search women driving excavators. And it said, sorry, no results.
Oh, my God.
With the like YouTube sad face. And I was like, oh, my God, this is not over. Like, wow. We are right in the middle of it.
Well, yeah. I mean, what is it? 71 cents to the dollar that men get paid.
It's so crazy.
It's still it's not awful. There are a lot of other countries that are worse. But
right?
It's not perfect yet.
It's not perfect. And if we are going to be a beacon of what we can aspire to be.
Exactly.
We got to get our
pioneering new roads
together. Yep.
New roads, new ways.
And you are doing it. You are at
trying,
the forefront.
Trying very hard.
One foot in front of the other. You can't be awesome at everything all the time.
No. And I'm definitely not.
Thank you so much for coming on Sharp and Hot. You can find me on Twitter at Chef Emily P. You are Judy Jew Chef.
Exactly.
On Twitter and Instagram and Facebook as well.
Exactly.
The book is Korean Food Made Simple. It is available widely. Pick up a copy. Use the hashtag Sharp and Hot on Instagram and I'll send you a book from my collection. This might be it. Thank you, everyone, for listening. And until next week, keep playing with fire and knives.
Thank you. Sharp and hot with Chef Family. Sharp
and hot with Chef Family. Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.